Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable, our last roundtable before the election. Today, we are discussing the consequences of the upcoming election for press freedom, the dangers of billionaires owning news organizations, and the effects of the right-wing media machine spreading dangerous lies and conspiracy theories about the election. When you look back at all of the coverage, what really stands out for you? Who do you think did a good job? Who fell short? What are your thoughts about coverage of actual issues? We'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Mark Jacob, a freelance writer and former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sunday editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark Jacob writes the Stop the Presses newsletter. In his latest piece, Heroes and Villains of the 2024 Campaign, he writes, "Media cowardice is a primary theme of this year's politics. The owners of the Washington Post and Los Angeles Times refused to let their editorial boards endorse Kamala Harris. They, quote, obeyed in advance, out of fear that a would-be tyrant would win and harass their businesses. Utterly shameful." Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for asking me.
Jason Wilson is an investigative journalist based in Portland, Oregon. He writes about extremism for The Guardian. In his latest piece, political violence in U.S. could surge after the election, according to experts. He writes, there could be a potential surge in political violence following the election, and pro-Trump right-wing vigilante, quote, poll watchers might surveil ballot drop boxes as Americans cast their votes, experts warned this week. A new report from the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism highlighted alarming trends in online chatter, mirroring patterns observed in the lead-up to the 2020 election and the January 6th Capitol insurrection. Hi, Jason. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Well, I'd like to ask you both a general question. When you look back at the wall-to-wall coverage of this election, especially after President Biden dropped out, what are your thoughts? Who did a good job? Who didn't? Who fell short? Mark, you cover this so closely. What are your thoughts?
I think the New York Times did a terrible job. It was just really disappointing because they are an influential newspaper. Washington Post didn't do as bad a job. They did a fairly good job. And you started getting some headlines that were telling the truth, stating specifically when, Trump did incredibly strange things like talk about Arnold Palmer's private parts at in a speech. I mean, to some extent, you got what they call sane washing, where you try to, sand off the edges of this strangeness by Trump. But more as we got closer to Election Day, I think that some of the media, were humiliated by those kinds of criticisms enough that they started doing a better job. It may be too little too late. That's that thing that alarms me, because for most of this campaign, I feel like the press was very timid and very much interested in blaming both sides and just trying to, this performative objectivity that is not appropriate when you have a guy like Trump running.
Can you elaborate on your criticisms of the New York Times?
Well, for example, here's a good example, and it just happened recently. So they write a really good story about how there was a death of an 11-year-old Ohio boy. He was killed in a bus accident, and it involved one of the Haitian immigrants who'd been brought into Springfield, Ohio. It was just an accident. It wasn't, anything malicious. Trump and Vance and their supporters all hyped it as if this immigrant had, tried to, kill the boy on purpose. And the boy's family said, stop this. We don't want to be, part of this exploiting my son for hate. But they didn't stop. And so the headlines for the New York Times writes, that this horrible thing happened to this family. And the headline says, but then politics made it worse. Well, it wasn't politics that made it worse. It was Republicans. And for them to say politics, they do this all the time where they'll say, well, partisan politics or the divided, you know, politics. They will blame something vague instead of blaming something specific. And I think it's a cowardly news headline tactic that they do over and over again.
What about you, Jason? What are your thoughts of coverage of the election so far?
I think any criticisms about particular outlets I might have, I'd put that aside. The bigger picture to me, I think, is that, you know, sort of like factually oriented media, newspapers, you know, radio, like what people sometimes call the mainstream media, you know, or traditional media, legacy media, whatever you want to call it, it's become less influential on the whole and has really been kind of increasingly sort of sidelined by the fragmentation of our media, where people are kind of really, especially on the right, retreating into partisan media spaces where, you know, they're kind of told what they want to hear a lot of the time, or what the Trump campaign and people like Elon Musk want them to hear. You know, I think Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter and the way in which he's employed that to support Donald Trump has been maybe the biggest media story of this kind of election cycle. And, you know, that's a real difference even from 2022, where Musk had just took over as the kind of election was concluding. But you know, Twitter was trying to still, to the extent that it ever did, root out misinformation and all that kind of stuff. And now Twitter is really just a kind of avalanche of disinformation. And that's something that Musk clearly wants it to be. So I think the bigger picture is, you know, whatever criticisms we might have of particular outlets, we probably need to recognize that there's a problem in that those outlets are having less influence, and the outlets that actually try to get things factually correct are having less influence than ever before.
I'm glad you brought this up, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this, Mark, given that you spent so many years working for the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. Just to add what Jason said about Twitter, the algorithms have changed so drastically over the years. The algorithms decide what you see and what you don't see. So we're living in a new media ecosystem. I've been spending a lot of time just in this world of YouTubers who have millions and millions of viewers. Trump has been going on a lot of YouTube shows hosted by men. They're getting millions of views. Do you think, Mark, that we have even begun to really talk about this new media world we're living in now?
Well, we need to be talking about it, because what Jason said is entirely correct. But I think that legacy media has itself to blame for some of the reasons that I just mentioned. And the alarming thing to me about Twitter is that Musk is leaving things up that are complete lies, and he knows they're lies, and he wants them because they're mostly right wing lies, this new idea of social media and independent media, I mean, it could be very exciting, and in some ways is. I mean, there are a lot of great voices out there that wouldn't be out there if it wasn't kind of this democratized process on social media and, you know, and also independent regular media. But there are so many bad actors out there. There are so many people who are trying to lie to people on purpose. And then you have somebody really powerful like Musk, who's got that, you know, this audience, and he can just, you know, just shove lies at them. And it's just extremely alarming. And I don't know what you do about it in a free society with the First Amendment. I mean, it's a very tough issue. But my point is that these legacy media outlets need to be real truth tellers. They need to be crusaders for truth. That's how you fight back, not by, you know, this both sides, you know, a fake objectivity that just empowers the bad actors among us.
Well, here's a headline for you from the Washington Post today. Inside Elon Musk's vision to remake government. Delete, delete, delete. So there's his vision to remake government. And it says, in recent months, Musk has repeatedly floated the idea for a government efficiency commission, the Department of Government Efficiency. He's posted teasing memes on Twitter, X, and discussed the concept with allies on the Trump campaign on a Tesla earnings call and with friends, boasting at Sunday's rally that this Department of Government Efficiency could cut $2 trillion from the federal government. What about that headline, Mark?
Well, I mean, it's scary. And you know, Musk is a major government contractor. So he's going to be in charge of doing regulations and deciding who's what gets cut and what gets saved and how much money they get. And especially, like, he's going to regulate himself. I mean, this is outrageous. It should never be allowed to happen. And obviously, you know, voters are going to decide whether it happens or not. But this should be a really alarm bells, five alarm fire, that this guy has the kind of power and influence he does. And the fact that he's so reckless on his own social media platform ought to get the federal government to sever ties with him. I know it might be painful because of his technology, but it's painful and dangerous to our democracy that he has so much influence over what's going on now.
I also did not realize, because Elon Musk has so many government contracts, he has security clearance. At a campaign appearance last week, he said, "I do have a top secret clearance, but I have to say, like most of the stuff that I'm aware of, the reason they keep it top secret is because it's so boring."
Yeah, it is scary how much he's crawled into the power structure of this country. And just to be really clear, it's not that he has opinions that I don't agree with. It's that he lies constantly and he retweets people who are engaging in complete hoaxes. Things that, you know, they're repeating, you know, on Twitter, you know, the Russians are dumping, you know, fake videos and stuff like that to, you know, to undermine trust in elections. And Elon Musk is helping him do it.
Well, we have a caller who wants to talk about the algorithms and then how much power some of these tech companies have. So let's hear from Dell in Berkeley. Hi, Dell. Welcome to the show. Do we still have Dell? Hello, Dell. All right. Well, if you can call back, Dell, we'll definitely put you on the line. Can we talk a little bit more about the impact of the right-wing media machine and why you think there's so little attention on just how fast the lies and the conspiracy theories are spreading now, because they have just such a massive reach. What are your thoughts about that, Jason?
Well, I mean, you know, just to go back, I think to what you and Mark were talking about, I think a lot of this, whether we want to look at Musk and X and Twitter and his impact, or another big media story, I guess, which was the Washington Post, you know, choosing or being told by its owner to not publish an endorsement of Kamala Harris. I mean, both of those stories are about the power that, you know, you can accrue if you're one of the richest people on the planet. Both of those guys are in that rank, you know, of the top kind of 10 richest people on planet Earth. And you know, if we think about media as something that holds power to account, you know, like unchecked wealth allows you to kind of blunt that and allows you to take over the institutions that should really be, you know, placing a check on people like Bezos and Musk. But anyway, that aside, yes, and to something that Mark said, Musk isn't just letting stuff spread. You know, he's doing it himself. He's on X promoting, creating, you know, disinformation, really, to send out into the world. You know, when there's no one who's able to, or willing or able to stop that on a platform like X, you know, it's kind of reaching all the people he needs it to reach. And as my reporting shows, you know, a lot of the people who are out there on the far right are talking about monitoring, you know, polling stations again, you know, like as they did in Arizona in 2022, when, you know, until a court order stopped them, there were people who were armed who were directly observing people dropping their votes off at drop boxes, ballot drop boxes. You know, there are people talking about doing that again. They've clearly prepared the groundwork, you know, Musk and others on the right, for no one, you know, no one who supports Trump to accept the result of the election should he lose. And that's just a really dangerous situation. It's dangerous in the same way that it was dangerous in 2020. I would say, though, that now the information environment is kind of much worse, because Twitter was more of a kind of neutral arbiter or space at that time. And now it's just a machine for spreading right-wing propaganda. So, yeah, it's a dangerous situation that we've gotten ourselves into. It's hard to know kind of how to fix, you know, you can't really stop people owning social media platforms, and you can't really stop them doing what they want with those social media platforms once they have them, unless you pass new laws. So that's something to think about. As far as, you know, someone like Bezos goes, you know, I mean, we probably need to think again about this as the result of the enormous wealth inequalities that exist in the United States at the moment.
Right. And just one more question on this. In one of your other pieces in The Guardian called Expect War, leaked chats reveal influence of right-wing media on militia group. Where do these militia groups get their information?
Well, they get it from, you know, they oftentimes, as I reported in that story, they're getting it directly from Elon Musk on X. But, you know, there are a number of pretty influential channels of disinformation out there. You know, the Gateway Pundit is another one I mentioned in the story. It's a kind of right-wing website. It's been around for many years. They were actually sued by a couple of election workers, the same ones who sued Rudy Giuliani, actually, and they settled out of court with those folks. So they've been, you know, you've got a website that has a record of spreading disinformation about elections in the United States for years. And it's the same kind of actors. And they also, you know, there are influences within that subculture who are big sources of disinformation as well. But, like, you know, I think in general terms, if you look at partisan right-wing media now, there's no one who's really preparing folks for the possibility that Donald Trump might lose. There's no one who's canvassing that as a possibility, and there's no indication that they're going to recognize an adverse result for Trump should it happen. And you know, that's where you get political violence, right? Like as you saw on 6th of January 2021.
That's why there's so many suspicious polls right now on the right, you know, that are saying, you know, that, oh, he's going to win, is because they want to delegitimize the election before any votes are counted. And, you know, that's why you have, you know, Trump and Vance talking about, oh, in Pennsylvania, all these bad things are happening. Well, to me, that's a sign that the Trump campaign's internal polling is showing that they're not doing very well in Pennsylvania. But for them, it's what it is them saying, well, we're not doing very well in Pennsylvania, so let's delegitimize the election in Pennsylvania. And the thing about it is when they do that, they almost always go to big cities, which have big black populations. They are actively going against, they are assaulting the right of black people to vote in this country. You know, you see it in Atlanta, you see it in Philadelphia, you see it in Chicago. I mean, it's part of the impulse is racism, or part of the message is racism, saying that we can't trust black people to vote because they don't want black people to vote.
I think, you know, part of what's going on here too, just to add to that, is that I think what the dynamics you're seeing are of a political movement, a political party that is no longer confident that it can secure a majority, you know, electoral majorities, and has kind of reacted to that by kind of like not electing not to compete for an electoral majority, right? And to experiment with ways to win with a minority of voters, a minority of the population, and they've doubled down on trying to attract to turn out men, and particularly white men, as the main basis of their coalition. So, you know, that's what part of what's going on there.
Well, you know, when Obama won, they had two options. They could have said, oh, we're starting to lose, you know, support here. We need to adjust our policies slightly to be a little more to the center. Or they could have decided, well, we're going to start cheating more now. And they decided they were going to start cheating more now. That's the sad thing. I mean, in a healthy democracy, the Republican Party would have said, you know, we're starting to lose it here. Let's adjust our policies and become more moderate. They didn't do that. They just decided, you know, with help from the Supreme Court and the Citizens United ruling and this kind of this billionaire huge influence to spread disinformation and to try to keep people from voting, they decided that they would attack democracy instead, and which is really sad. I mean, they had a choice, you know, 15 years ago of which way they were going to go, and we saw which way they went.
And to the points you're all bringing up, there are some good articles out about this. So the New York Times actually has a piece, Why the Right Thinks Trump is Running Away with the Race. And every time you hear about polls, it's just constant. The media have really just talked about polls. And I mean, of course, we're not going to know until election night, but here's the piece from the New York Times. The torrent of polls began arriving a few weeks ago, one after the other, most showing a victory for Trump. They stood out amid the hundreds of others indicating a dead heat in the election, but they had something in common. They were commissioned by right-leaning groups with a vested interest in promoting Republican strength. I don't want to spend too much time on this because the election is in a few days. But Mark, what is the responsibility of the media when they're constantly talking about polling? Shouldn't they tell us, where's this poll coming from? How many people are you talking about here? Is this a landline or a cell phone? Are you talking to new young women who are going to be voting? There's just so many factors involved.
Well, number one, they should talk about polls less, a lot less.
Yes.
Because what it is, it's their way of kind of goosing up the narrative, the suspense, and just making it more of an entertainment story when they should be making it, you know, an important story about issues. But so they do polls way too much. They do too many polls. They do internal polls, which I think we should be just excluded. In other words, like one campaign will say, well, we did a poll and this is what it showed. Well, they don't know the methodology. They don't know whether that campaign got three polls and is picking the one they like the best to give to them. I mean, there's just no transparency there. So they shouldn't even report it. But many do. It's part of the whole kind of political gossip industry based in Washington, D.C. And it doesn't serve the public at all.
And then, Jason, just talking about Pennsylvania here, I've been saying this for a few weeks. I really don't think people realize how angry women are about what happened to abortion. Mm. And here's a Politico headline. Democrats see signs for optimism in gender gap in the early vote. And they looked at Pennsylvania. Here's another one from Politico. Trump is lagging in the early vote with seniors in Pennsylvania, a red flag for the GOP. And two good articles. Here's one from The Guardian. Republicans are already laying the groundwork for rejecting the results of the election, with early lawsuits baselessly alleging fraud and polls from right-leaning groups. And then The New York Times yesterday, Trump and Vance are escalating their false attacks about the security of the Pennsylvania elections, ramping up baseless accusations about voter fraud. So we know the playbook. What are your thoughts about, because here's the thing, on election day and night, things are going to be moving so fast, and everybody wants to get there first. They're going to have to take their time before they call it, and then we're going to have to keep a track on political violence. So what are your thoughts about how media should be responsible to really track all of this on election night and keep tabs on what the Republicans are saying and the lies that are coming out from the party?
Well, I can say from experience, as someone who's reported on, you know, the far right for a decade or so now, it's getting increasingly difficult. The right have poured enormous resources into, you know, this polling stuff is just the latest, right? They're kind of engineering an alternative reality for Trump supporters to live in,
right.
And there's a torrent of disinformation out there, and it is really difficult to keep up. Like I'm today kind of going to train myself up in some new software tools to sort of try at least to keep some sort of bead on it, because one thing I'd say is that a lot of the right's conspiracy theories now are sort of drowning each other out to some extent. I mean, that's they're kind of trying to launch too many things at once, and it's kind of taking away from the momentum of any one thing. You've seen that in recent days. You know, Elon Musk is trying to launch a conspiracy theory at the same time Don Jr. is, or whatever, and they don't, neither of them quite land as a result. But like, that's just an indication of the volume of stuff that's out there. And you know, X is a big force multiplier. They're not confined anymore to you know, these alt tech sites where people used to go when they were banned from mainstream places. Facebook is really, you know, not covering itself in glory either. There's been some great reporting in Wired in recent days about how, you know, militia groups are organizing on there and they're not really being stopped or moderated. You know, Facebook's official position is that they're going to, the algorithm is going to kind of deprioritize politics, which, you know, maybe sounds like that's a neutral move. But in fact, you know, it just means that disinformation can't easily be corrected on that platform either, especially with the stance they're taking on moderation. So in answer to your question, it's very difficult for me as a reporter to kind of even keep track of all the disinformation that's being put out there. And I think that's a kind of familiar experience. I mean, the other dimension that I should have mentioned earlier, but it's just the kind of collapse of local media, you know, of local newspapers and the like. And the vacuum left by their collapse has often been filled by, again, you know, astroturfed local media spreading right-wing disinformation. They've thrown enormous resources at just creating that alternative reality.
Mark, your thoughts? What would you like to add in your final thoughts?
Well, I mean, you cited some mainstream media stories that are warning us about all of this, and that's great. The real problem, and I don't know how you solve it, but the real problem is that the right-wing propaganda has been so effective in the last 25 years that it has made many people shut off from mainstream media and think that, you know, Fox News wants you to believe that the only people who are telling the truth are Fox News. And it's interesting, mainstream media doesn't spend a lot of time talking about how Fox is lying, but Fox spends a ton of time talking about how mainstream media is lying. And so that has an effect. And so they, in some ways, they have siloed, they've cocooned their audience to where they're just impervious to facts. And, you know, it's what Jason was saying, you know, it is, you know, another version of reality has been created here. And how do you break that down? I mean, I don't know. It's a psychological problem. But it could destroy our democracy if we don't figure out how to do it, because there were a lot of bad people who are trying to make millions of Americans think that something is going on that's not. And how do you break them out of that mindset? I don't know, but it's scaring the heck out of me.
Mark Jacob is a freelance writer and former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sunday editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. He writes the Stop the Presses newsletter. His latest piece is Heroes and Villains of the 2024 Campaign. Jason Wilson is an investigative journalist based in Portland, Oregon. He writes about far-right extremism for The Guardian. Jason and Mark, thanks for joining us, and we'd love to have you back after the election.
Thanks so much. Great. Good luck, everybody.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we'll talk about a new ProPublica investigation exposing how for years this country's major gun makers have shared their customers' personal information to win elections. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.